from both of us.
Let me ask Robin Marty if you want to comment on that, and also this division that is growing in the Democratic Party between progressives and the Democratic establishment. Yesterday, the outgoing White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield saying in a statement, Joe Biden's goal in responding to Dobbs is not to satisfy some activists who've been consistently out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party. Your response?
So first to the what Diane had said, I do believe that obviously abortion clinics need to exist, and there are always going to be people who need non-medication abortion. There's also always going to be people who need follow-up abortion care. Medication abortion, as Diane pointed out, is not 100% effective. It's very safe if the pills are gotten from a place that we know is giving verified medication. It's the same medication as in our clinic. But when you have a failed abortion, so one that the abortion did not work, or you have a situation where all of the products haven't come out or are bleeding, the reality is that we still need to have places where people can come to, because people are going to do medication abortion out of state, but they are going to come home to finish it. And so once they are at home taking the second dose of their medication, they're now in a place where there is no legal abortion clinic. People are going to need a place to go that will provide that care, regardless of whether they do elective abortion at all. As for the Biden administration's lack of finesse on actually pulling together a coalition, we know that abortion is extraordinarily popular. We know, especially now at the outpouring of the protests that have been happening in D.C., across the country. In Alabama, we've had multiple protests since this decision came down, which has only been a couple of weeks. People want everyone to be able to have action to their own access to their own bodily autonomy. That is a fundamental right, and it's one that the Biden administration has to address, because it belongs to everyone and everyone supports it.
Robin Marty, we want to thank you for being with us, Operation Director of West Alabama Women's Center, which has just reopened, and Diane Dersis, CEO and owner of Jackson Women's Health Organization, Mississippi's only abortion clinic, was center of the Supreme Court case that overturned Roe v. Wade. It has closed. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon COVID surge worsening. The Democratic National Committee predicts possible federal abortion ban. And in international news, London's Heathrow Airport limits passenger travel. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 12th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Oregon will continue to see a rise in COVID-19 cases over the next few weeks. Infection levels will likely be similar to what Oregon saw with the first Omicron wave last January. This prediction comes from Oregon Health and Science University data scientist Peter Graven. The surge is being driven by the Omicron subvariants BA4 and BA5, which are the most transmissible of the COVID-19 variants seen so far. Protection from vaccines in prior infections appears to be less than with the original COVID variants. Even those who got the BA1 or BA2 variants, those as recently as April, could get reinfected with the BA4 and BA5 versions. But the immunity still protects reasonably well against severe outcomes. Graven said we are seeing less severity in more incidental hospitalizations across the state. He thinks our hospital census will only get up to about half as high as it did in January. He still recommends getting booster doses of vaccine whenever patients are eligible. He would not wait for a specific vaccine against the new variants. The Oregon Department of Forestry just announced that all of its fire districts are officially in wildfire season. Record-breaking rainfall delayed the start of the season for parts of the state. However, all the spring moisture has contributed to the growth of grasses and shrubs, which could create issues later in the summer. Drier, hotter conditions are predicted, and fire officials are urging Oregonians to prepare and take steps to prevent human-caused blazes. The official start of fire season means there will be public use restrictions for parts of Oregon, such as campfire bans. The Department of Forestry recommends drowning campfires, monitoring debris piles, not parking cars on dry grass, and properly disposing of cigarettes. The highest current fire risk appears to be in central and southern Oregon, from the Columbia River down to the California border, plus southeast Oregon. Future fire outlooks show a higher fire risk spreading to the western part of the state in August and September. Northwest Oregon has below normal potential for large wildfires at least this month. The Willow Creek Fire has been the largest in Oregon this year, burning more than 40,000 acres. Otherwise, fire activity has been minimal to date. The Oregon Department of Emergency Management reports 4 active fires burning less than half an acre total as of Monday. Oregon currently has no large active fires. The fire districts combined cover about 16 million acres. The Democratic National Committee, or DNC, is launching a digital ad campaign warning voters that Republicans' ultimate goal is to outlaw abortion nationwide. The committee is sponsoring a $10,000 ad buy that began yesterday on the websites of more than 20 lifestyle publications. The ads feature a picture of Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell alongside text that says, quote, "Republicans are pushing to ban abortion nationally. Join us in fighting back," end quote. Since the Supreme Court recently nullified Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that legalized the right to an abortion nationwide, many Republican-led states have enacted broad restrictions on the procedure. No federal legislation outlawing abortion exists, but McConnell suggested that, even before the Supreme Court's ruling, that this was a possibility in the future. Former Vice President Mike Pence said after the ruling that, quote, "We must not rest and must not relent until the sanctity of life is restored to the center of American law in every state in the land," end quote. The DNC ads are promoting what it is calling a week of action devoted to defending abortion rights. Democrats seem to be hoping outrage over the Supreme Court's action can fire up voters ahead of the midterm elections, while inflation remains at record highs and President Biden's approval ratings plummet. Yesterday's ad buy follows a similar five-figure digital campaign launched at the end of June, in which the DNC proclaimed that Republicans, quote, "want to go further and ban abortion. Believe them," end quote. Minnesota is more likely to remain an abortion safe haven state. Mike Moen has more on the story.
Minnesota's status as a safe haven state was enhanced Monday after a court ruling lifted several abortion restrictions. The procedure remained legal in Minnesota in spite of the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn federal protections, but the state still had a number of requirements, including a 24-hour waiting period. A Ramsey County judge said rules like that one violated the state's constitution. Shayla Walker is with the group Our Justice, which was involved in bringing the case forward, and calls the decision a victory for anyone seeking this type of care.
And it comes at a time when Minnesota's protections for abortion are essential for people traveling as far as Texas and Missouri to get abortion care here.
Another requirement struck down involved both parents having to be notified before a minor can get an abortion. Opponents were quick to criticize the decision, including the group Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. It called the judge's ruling extreme, while arguing the rules that had been in place were common sense measures. Meanwhile, Megan Peterson of the group Gender Justice says the ruling aligns with the idea that it's not enough just to allow this type of care.
The court held that the Minnesota Constitution protects not just the fundamental right to choose abortion, but also the fundamental right to access abortion care.
The fallout from the ruling is spilling over into the race for Minnesota Attorney General. Republican candidate Jim Schultz urged DFL incumbent Keith Ellison to defend the state's law. Ellison, who was not in support of the restrictions, acknowledged his duties in that regard. He said he'll review the ruling as part of a 60-day window to file an appeal. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
Consumer advocates want to prevent used cars with unrepaired recall defects from being sold. Suzanne Potter has more on that story.
Consumer advocates are out to stop unrepaired cars with recall defects from winding up with new owners. Federal law bans car dealers from selling unrepaired new cars and rental agencies from selling or renting them. Now consumer activists want the feds to forbid car dealers to sell at retail used cars with unrepaired safety recall defects. The Used Car Safety Recall Repair Act would allow the feds to fine dealers that sell unrepaired recalled used cars, even if no one has suffered damages or been harmed. Rosemary Shahan with the nonprofit Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says these cars are ticking time bombs.
In the case of the Dakota airbags, they've killed dozens of people and injured hundreds more. And as time goes on and the vehicles get older, they're much more prone to having this problem.
Shahan singles out CarMax, the largest dealer of used vehicles in the nation, because they sell cars with unrepaired recalled safety defects once they pass a 125-point safety inspection. CarMax, in a statement, says they share vehicle-specific open recall information in-store and online to ensure their customers know about open recalls prior to purchase. And they say the current recall repair system requires manufacturers to pay for repairs at their dealerships, not via independent retailers who are their competitors. Years ago, Shahan says, her group filed a complaint against CarMax with the Federal Trade Commission, but the FTC ruled they can keep advertising the cars as safe as long as they make the disclosure.
It's very deceptive, especially when they're advertising that the vehicles have passed an inspection. How could it possibly pass an inspection when it has unrepaired safety recall defects?
Shahan encourages all prospective car buyers to check the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration website to find out whether the car is under recall, and if so, she advises you walk away. The Used Car Safety Recall Repair Act was introduced last year but has not received a hearing or a vote. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The global water crisis is worsening. PSU Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov has more on the story. The views and opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of KBOO Community Radio.
Hello, everyone. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Remember that line from Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner? Water is drying up everywhere today. Oceans and rivers are becoming more polluted and poisoned. Watersheds are being drained at a phenomenal rate to meet the needs of industry, sports, and agriculture. Drinking quality water, especially in developing countries, is becoming a major challenge. And everywhere, good water, access to which should be a human right, is becoming expensive and privately owned. Here are some basic facts on the global water crisis as provided by UNICEF. 4 billion people, almost two-thirds of the world's population, experience severe water scarcity for at least 1 month each year. Over 2 billion people live in countries where water supply is inadequate. Half the world's population could be living in areas facing water scarcity by as early as 2025. Some 700 million people could be displaced by intense water scarcity by 2030. And by 2040, roughly 1 in 4 children worldwide will be living in areas of extremely high water stress. Here are some reports from around the world that bring home these trends. Italy is experiencing an intense, protracted heat wave, with temperatures forecast to eclipse 40 degrees centigrade in parts of the country by the end of the week. The drought has hit northern regions especially hard, where a parched Po River, Italy's longest waterway, is 80% lower than usual, wreaking havoc on everything from farming and hydroelectric power to supplies of drinking water. In Australia, a report by a climate group describes Australia and the Asia Pacific as a, quote, disaster alley for climate change. The report cites predictions that 2 degrees centigrade of warming may see Southeast Asia's crop production decline by one-third per capita by 2040. It says small island developing states in the Pacific are especially vulnerable to the effects of drought and flooding on food production. China faces a water crisis in which as many as half the population does not have access to clean water. Nearly all groundwater is contaminated. Agricultural runoff and industrial toxic waste dumping are among the major causes of the crisis. Weak enforcement of environmental regulations and sheer disregard of sound environmental practices by domestic and multinational corporations alike contribute to the crisis. Here at home, a Utah newspaper reports that the Colorado River Basin is experiencing a 22-year drought and low runoff conditions, and reservoirs within the basin are at historic low levels. Lake Powell and Lake Mead are below one-third of normal levels. Water for seven states will probably have to be restricted. Meantime, California's two largest reservoirs, Shasta Lake and Lake Oroville, are at critically low levels, and the Great Salt Lake in Utah set a new record low level on July 4th. The world's oceans have been especially hard hit, leading the UN Secretary General to declare the other day an ocean emergency. As reported by The Guardian, sea level rise, ocean heating, ocean acidification, and greenhouse gas concentrations all reached record levels last year. Pollution is creating vast coastal dead zones. Fish stocks are being rapidly depleted by overfishing. Nearly 80% of the world's wastewater is discharged into the sea without treatment. Among the many toxic substances that are regularly dumped into national and international waterways, plastics leads the list. China, India, and the U.S. are the top producers of disposable plastics, which, according to a UN estimate, by 2050 will account for about 12 billion tons of plastic waste worldwide. Banning plastics is catching on, but very slowly and with plenty of pushback from manufacturers. And those manufacturers at the very top are ExxonMobil, Dow Chemical, Sinopec, China's state oil company, Indorama Ventures, a global petrochemical company based in Singapore and Bangkok, and Saudi Aramco. As numerous scientific reports have made plain, we're headed toward environmental catastrophe, and in the U.S. it's equally plain why. The political power of right-wing politicians, the fossil fuel companies that fund them, and a malicious Supreme Court majority that takes its cue from them. Paul Krugman in The Times puts the issue succinctly. What's important right now is that the United States is the only major nation in which an authoritarian right-wing party, which lost the popular vote in seven of the past eight presidential elections, yet controls the Supreme Court, has the ability to block actions that might prevent climate catastrophe. It's certainly debatable that the ballot box is the path to changing national environmental policy, but at the local level, some people are fighting to protect water. In Florida, for example, a constitutional ballot initiative is before voters that would grant a right to clean and healthy waters. Legislators can be held accountable in court for failing to protect water supplies. We'll need a lot more action like that right now to save waterways. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Gertog for The Global Citizen.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. And at 8, The Melting Pot. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 58. Tomorrow, we will see a lot of sun with a high of 91. Today in history, in 1862, the Medal of Honor was authorized by the United States Congress. The quote of the day is from Harry S. Truman, who awarded hundreds of medals as president, but would not accept one just for holding office. Truman said, "My own sympathy has always been with the little fellow, the man without advantages." Do not want Biden to run again in 2024, and FDA considers approving an over-the-counter birth control pill, the first of its kind. With those stories and more, here's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Let me finish my comment. Let him talk. No one, okay? Because make no mistake about it, this legislation is real progress, but more has to be done.
President Biden's remarks Monday in the White House Rose Garden on recently passed gun safety legislation were interrupted by Manuel Oliver, whose son was killed in 2018 during a mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Biden urged Congress to do more to prevent gun violence. Biden departs today for Israel, the West Bank, and Saudi Arabia for a Middle Eastern summit. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
This trip will reinforce a vital American role in a strategically consequential region. And also, it will reinforce that our role is different today than it was 20 years ago on the eve of the war in Iraq.
As the president travels abroad, a New York Times Siena College poll published Monday found 64% of Democratic voters believe the party should nominate a different candidate for president in 2024. The January 6th committee holds its seventh public hearing today on the attack on the U.S. Capitol, with a focus on the Trump administration and its alleged ties to extremist groups. Former Trump strategist Steve Bannon made a last-minute offer to testify just days before his criminal trial for defying the panel's subpoena is set to begin. The FDA has received an application from the drug company HRA Pharma for the first over-the-counter birth control pill. The Supreme Court's ruling overturning Roe v. Wade is heightening attention on contraceptive access across the nation. Dr. Colleen McNicholas, chief medical officer at Planned Parenthood St. Louis in Southwest Missouri, reassured residents they can still access contraceptives.
Birth control is available and legal in the state of Missouri.
Voters in Michigan are one step closer to deciding whether abortion remains legal in that state. Activists delivered signatures to put an abortion rights amendment on the November ballot. The Reproductive Freedom for All amendment would create protections for abortion, miscarriage management, birth control, prenatal care, and in vitro fertilization. Americans continue to grapple with high price tags on gas, groceries, and housing. As consumer spending power weakens, critics point to corporations' increased profit margins. Chief economist at Groundwork Collective, Rakeen Mahboud, says large corporations are partly responsible for rising costs.
We're really perfectly positioned by virtue of their market power to take advantage of this period of economic shocks.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Food insecurity is a major issue for Western college students. Mark Richardson has more.
There may be some truth to the expression about the starving college student struggling to earn a degree. A survey of students enrolled in Utah colleges and universities found that for many, chronic food insecurity is a major issue. The survey, commissioned by Utahns Against Hunger, asked students at several Utah campuses if they regularly have access to a sufficient quantity of affordable, nutritious food. Almost 2 out of 5 students responded that they struggle to put food on the table. Yesenia Quintana, a researcher and co-author of the report, says poor nutrition can affect more than a student's grades.
Students that were hungry had lower GPAs. They were much more likely to report that they had a long-term health issue, that they had poor health, that they were struggling to pay rent or their mortgage, or that they were struggling with utilities or getting clothing or any other of your basic needs. So it's not just limited to food.
Quintana says the statistics found for Utah students closely tracked national studies on hunger on campus. The Utah survey found that food insecurity disproportionately impacts women, first-generation students, students of color, and rural students. She says students with nutritional needs often turn to relatives, free events, food pantries, or government assistance programs to find sufficient food. As a result, she says, those students also often face medical and emotional challenges.
Students who are food insecure are much more likely to be socially isolated, which is not going to be helpful for them as far as like getting the support that they need.
Quintana says she hopes the study will provide a roadmap for Utah colleges and social service agencies to develop programs to help students meet their nutritional needs and their academic goals.
Utahns Against Hunger do have recommendations, and they have presented on those recommendations to every single of them, what they could be doing nationally to locally to what they could be doing on their own campus.
The study was conducted over a 6-week period in late 2021 and surveyed more than 5,700 students from a variety of colleges and universities around the state. I'm Mark Richardson for Utah News Connection.
A Canadian First Nation mourns the loss of a child. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nation in Canada is grieving the loss of a young community member after police confirmed the body of a 5-year-old boy who went missing in April was found over the weekend. The CBC reports Frank Young was playing outside when he was last seen on the Red Earth Cree Nation in Saskatchewan. Police say he was found Saturday in a river not far from where he went missing. They do not suspect foul play. Police and volunteers had conducted searches on land, air, and boat around the community and the surrounding area. Tributes and condolences are pouring in on social media for the family and community. Red Earth Cree Nation Chief Fabian Head thanked people for their support during their time of grief. The First Nation and police are expected to hold a press conference Tuesday as the investigation continues. The Shinnecock Nation in New York and the Tilt Holdings Company broke ground Monday on construction of a cannabis dispensary located on Shinnecock Territory in Southampton. A ceremony was held at the future site of the Little Beach Harvest, a 5,000-square-foot dispensary. The tribal cannabis operation is a result of a partnership between the tribe and the company after 6 years of lobbying, development, and planning. Construction is expected to be completed by early 2023, and there are plans for a future wellness and consumption lounge. The Shinnecock Nation is a federally recognized tribe located on its ancestral territory on Long Island. Tilt is a global provider of cannabis business solutions, including cultivation, manufacturing, processing, and brand development. A fourth California condor will be attempted to be released Tuesday into Yurok Ancestral Territory in Redwood National Park. The Yurok tribe, in collaboration with national and state parks, started releasing 3 condors in May. The restoration effort began in 2008. The release of condors is in an area where the endangered birds have been absent for more than a century. For the tribe, the recovery of the species is part of restoration of the ecosystem and the people responsible for taking care of it. The condor plays a principal role in the tribe's creation story and is prominently featured in traditional dances. In a video message in May, Tribal Council member Sherry Provault shared the significance of the reintroduction and what it means for future generations.
We know why they left. Logging and environmental destruction occurred, and we lost them in my lifetime. And my children now, they're adults. And then my grandchildren, it'll be exciting to know that this will always be in their life. They will always see this bird. And it is our responsibility to make sure that it has a home, that it's safe, and that it can thrive. It's just amazing to think about what we're doing as a community and as a people to bring back our traditions, our cultural knowledge. There's yet so much to do.
The condor has to voluntarily enter a designated staging area with access to the outside world. Plans for reintroduction are 1 cohort of condors every year for at least the next 2 decades. The Native American Heritage Fund recently announced awards for 6 projects in Michigan communities to help replace Indian mascots in public schools. Nearly $480,000 will support community projects, academic program updates, mascot changes, and other projects that honor Native Americans. Board Chair Jamie Stuck says funding the decommission of racist mascot imagery now will leave more money in the future for proactive programs and curriculum. The awards will be distributed in August. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
London's Heathrow Airport is imposing a 2-month cap on daily passenger traffic. This action by the UK's busiest airport appears to be in response to a recent surge in travel demand. The airport will limit daily passenger traffic to 100,000 departing people through September 11th. Current forecasts predict there will be as many as 104,000 passengers a day over the summer, still below the roughly 125,000 passengers that left daily at this time before the pandemic. Heathrow said staffing is not yet, quote, up to full speed, end quote, following a mass exodus of workers during the pandemic. The airport has struggled in particular in recent weeks as long-haul travel, in which Heathrow specializes, increased significantly. Some key functions, like ground handling for baggage, remain significantly under-resourced, and travelers have already experienced major disruptions. Passengers have been arriving extra early, causing further chaos. The airport today asked customers not to arrive more than 3 hours before their flight. John Holland Kay, Heathrow's CEO, said, quote, "Our objective is to protect flights for the vast majority of passengers at Heathrow this summer. We recognize that this will mean some summer journeys will either be moved to another day, another airport, or be canceled, and we apologize to those whose travel plans are affected," end quote. Many in social media are recommending avoiding Heathrow altogether. Other capacity curbs across Europe have been put into place. Last month, Gatwick Airport, London's second biggest hub, said it would limit airlines to 825 flights a day in July and 850 per day in August, from a pre-pandemic peak of around 950. In the UK, last-minute flight cancellations from the country almost tripled in June compared with the same month in 2019, even with fewer flights being operated by airlines. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 12th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Tonight's producer is myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moan, Mel Gurtov, Mark Richardson, and Suzanne Potter. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! At 8, Wednesday Talk Radio. And at 10, it's Flashpoints. All of these KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution.